Welcome back to the Bob Harden Show. And now here's your host, Bob Harden.
Thanks so much for joining us here on the show. We're providing you news and commentary rooted in a commitment to individual liberty, personal responsibility, limited government, and the rule of law. Coming up, going to be visiting with Larry Reed, President Emeritus of the Foundation for Economic Education. Right now, we have with us Mark Shulman. Mark is the founder and publisher of a terrific multimedia website. It's called HistoryCenter.com. I hope you check it out. Mark, thank you so much for joining us here on the show.
My pleasure, like usual.
Thank you so much, Mark. By the way, Mark has been a guest on Monday morning, almost without exception, for the last, I'm going to say, at least 15 years, so we really appreciate his commentary. Mark, let's start off with what's happened in Morocco, this terrible earthquake.
Right, an absolutely terrible earthquake, and the situation where the buildings, of course, were not reinforced to deal with earthquake. It's the worst earthquake. Well, the last earthquake in Morocco was in 1960, but the last, this is the worst one in 100 years.
Mm.
And so, of course, the death toll now is 2,000. It'll probably grow considerably beyond that as, you know, bodies are pulled out from the rubble, etc. It's an act of nature, a terrible act. The only thing that I can say on a political sort of level is the government of Morocco is refusing national aid from any other country.
Really?
They want to show they can, you know, which is really a sad thing. You know, it's as my son said to me last night, it shows complete lack of political leadership to say you're not going to accept help in a situation like that.
Right.
You know, it's something that's way beyond the ability of any one government to handle.
Yeah.
Certainly, you know, government of Morocco, and they're getting, you know, some NGOs are helping them and things of that nature, and they're accepting those sort of things, but the actual government help they refuse to accept, and people are going to die as a result, because, you know, there are only so many trained people in Morocco, I'm sure, who are trained at finding people under, you know, under buildings when things like this happen. But in the world, there are a lot of people like that, and if you, you know, get help from other countries, you can get a lot of help pretty quickly these days. So
absolutely, yeah. And the sad thing is not just finding the people. We're talking about people who are now homeless, people who are hungry, who are injured. I mean, there's it's just a massive, horrible incident. So that's just very strange. What's the reasoning? Why don't they want the help?
They're trying to. It's national identity. It's, you know, this thing about, you know, we can do it. We have a strong government and all those type of things, which is pretty insane, ultimately. We see that all over the world sometimes. We even see it in the United States. You know, I'm not sure the United States would accept help if we had some sort of huge national disaster. We'd say, oh, we can do it, you know, but it's not the case. It's you know, whatever you can say about world organizations and everything else, they have given a situation where people help each other when necessary, when terrible things happen that is beyond one's control.
Yeah.
That's what, you know, good neighbors are for, let's put it that way. And the world is full of some, you know, we have some bad neighbors, but most countries are good neighbors. They'd like to help because they want to be helped when their time comes.
Well, I know we accepted help even from Bangladesh and other countries during Katrina. So we're not immune to doing that, but that's a sad commentary. So let's move to Ukraine.
So Ukraine, a couple of interesting developments. Of course, number one, I mean, I say this every week, but it's true every week. The Ukrainians are making pretty constant progress at this point in both the central and the southern battlefield. They're pushing back the Russians, you know, not patent-like grand moves, but every single day they capture a little more territory and push the Russians back further, and they've penetrated the main Russian defense lines, and it seems like they penetrated the second line as well. So they're making that progress on a constant basis. The Russians are running out of ammunition very quickly. They used 500,000 shells in the last year, I believe it was, and they can only produce 100,000 a year.
Hmm.
So right now, Kim Jong-un from North Korea is on his way by train to Russia to meet with Putin. The idea is that North Korea is going to supply the Russians with arms. I mean, just think of how upside and backwards this all is, right?
Yeah.
The Russians are getting arms from Iran. The Russians are getting arms from North Korea. They used to be the ones selling arms.
Yeah.
So it really is a backwards sort of effect. And, of course, neither of these countries really have the state-of-the-art sort of armaments that NATO and the United States has. So we'll see. It seems like the United States is finally going to be giving the Ukrainians the long-range missiles that they've been asking for a long time. It came out this week that the Ukrainians were about to successfully attack the Russian fleet in Crimea at their main naval base. And at the last minute, Elon Musk turned off the satellites so that they couldn't succeed, and the remotely controlled submarines just failed in the mission because they lost control of them.
Hmm.
So that's an interesting question here on multiple levels of why, you know, one individual having that power, whether you agree with the decision, you don't agree with the decision. The idea that a individual who's not a government, who's not elected by anybody, etc., can make that decision is a bit frightening.
It is frightening, and it is his private property, and he can, you know, use it as he wishes as long as he doesn't break the law.
Well, but it gets a little complicated because at this point the U.S. government is paying him for using the Starlinks. In other words, the U.S. is—he's basically a military, you know—he's a military contractor, so to speak.
Uh-huh.
Initially, he gave it for free to the Ukrainians, but eventually the U.S. government picked up the tab, I believe.
Uh-huh.
So he's a military contractor.
I wasn't
and yet he's making
that.
His own policy. So yeah, it's his own satellites, but you know, he contracted to do certain things.
I wasn't aware that he was being paid for it, so that's an interesting wrinkle in the whole discussion. But you're absolutely right. I mean, it's bordering on raising a lot of questions about ethics, for sure.
Right, ethics and concentration of power and who decides. It's very problematic. You know, we have a situation where a couple of people control. You know, if you look at him in terms of Starlink and of course Tesla and SpaceX, much more importantly, a really strategic asset of the United States today, SpaceX is. Then you look at Google and Apple and, you know, five other companies and the amount of power the individuals who control those companies have. It's astounding when you think about it. You know, it puts the robber barons to shame, to say the least. And I'm not talking about money right now. I'm just talking about the ability to influence so many different things with the decisions they make.
Not only influence, but command.
Right. Well, I'm assuming that, you know, yes, in his case, this was commanding a situation.
Yeah. Right?
But generally speaking, the influence that Google, Apple, Facebook, and a few others can have on our lives is astounding when you think about it. And it's an issue, you know. People don't, if you believe in regulation or not, you got to wonder about some of these things and where we're going with it.
Absolutely. Mark, need to take a little break and you stick around?
Absolutely, Bob.
All right, we're going to have more here on the Bob Harden Show on the Bob Harden Broadcasting Network.
Stay tuned for more of the Bob Harden Show here on the Bob Harden Broadcasting Network.
You have questions about your retirement? Ameriprise Private Wealth Advisor Jason Nardella with Nardella Financial Group, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, LLC, can help. With the exclusive Confident Retirement Approach, you'll work together to develop a retirement roadmap to get you where you want to go. Call Nardella Financial Group today at 239-325-1041. That's 239-325-1041. Office is located at 9015 Stratiscale Court, Suite 103, Naples, Florida. The Confident Retirement Approach is not a guarantee of future financial results. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Gulf Shore Playhouse is passionately committed to enriching our cultural landscape by producing professional theater to the highest artistic standards and providing unique educational opportunities to folks in a spirit of service, adventure, and excitement. Gulf Shore Playhouse has expanded immensely, outgrowing its current facilities, with dreams of expanding even further in order to better serve the community, broaden the economic impact, and strengthen the cultural fabric of our region. Gulf Shore Playhouse is building a 44,000-square-foot state-of-the-art theater and education center on 3 acres at the corner of First Avenue South and Goodlett Frank Road. To find out more about Gulf Shore Playhouse, the state-of-the-art performing arts center, and about this season's exciting productions, visit GulfShorePlayhouse.org. That's GulfShorePlayhouse.org. We'll see you at the show.
Welcome back to the Bob Harden Show. And now here's your host, Bob Harden.
Thanks so much for joining us here on the show. I just want to remind you of Sizzle Dining. It's a 3-week promotional event And it runs through the 27th of September. 55 participating restaurants in Naples. Great opportunity to find out more about some of the great places to eat here in the Naples area. $1 is donated from every lunch and dinner purchased for the blessings in a backpack of Southwest Florida. So just check out the website. You can see the restaurants involved at sizzledining.com. Sizzledining.com. Coming up, we're going to visit with Jim McTagg, former Barron's Washington Bureau Chief. Right now, we continue the conversation with Mark Shulman, the founder and publisher of a terrific multimedia website, is historycentral.com. Again, Mark, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure, Bob.
So, Mark, right now it's difficult to discern exactly what's going on in China and what the impact might be globally. What are your thoughts?
Well, look, I mean, clearly there is no question that the Chinese economy is in trouble. Some could even say in free fall. So obviously that sort of puts a dent in their global aspirations, let's put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
It's very hard to have the influence when suddenly people are saying, oh, wait a second, you know, your own economy isn't doing very well. And there's, you know, people for the longest time considered the Chinese economy is unstoppable, and now it just doesn't seem to be the case. So I think it's a major issue at the moment, and I think the Chinese are going to have to figure out, you know, where they go from here.
Now, who's doing the figuring under those circumstances?
That's the question. Yep, that's a very much a question.
Right.
And so that's, you know. We shall see. You know, I've been the person saying for the last couple of months that we should stop worrying so much about China, at least at this point.
Yeah.
And we'll see. You know, it's sort of a mixed feeling for the world if the Chinese economy is in trouble, because they're also one of the biggest consumers in the world. And then we've had the other issue, which of course relating to Apple, and they have said that Apple phones can't be used by the government and government ministries, and that's caused a major drop in Apple stock, because China's a major market for Apple. But Apple also puts most of its phones together in China. So it's a complex relationship. That's the one thing we have to understand. It really is complex, and it's not black and white, and it's not like our relations with the Soviet Union, who we had very little trade with during the Cold War. It's a very different relationship.
So one thing I worry about, though, is many times when countries find themselves in these types of circumstances where there's tension developing with the people, is they'll look for international affairs to get involved in that can divert the attention and change the scent of what's happening in the country.
I mean, it's a problem, but I think it's less of a problem this day and age where people are more tuned into what's going on. I just don't really see it happening, but it's possible, you know. We should always fear that, no question about it.
Yeah. And any comments about, is anything developing with regard to Evergrande? I guess it is, I think. And
they're able to make some payments on their bonds this past week, so they didn't go into default again. But it's not clear if they're going to be able to keep on doing that. Let's put it that way. And that's their largest property developer in China.
Yeah.
So we'll see where that goes.
Well, the summit in India. What are your thoughts on what happened here this past weekend?
Well, a couple of things happened here, clearly. I mean, the summit in India showed some of the divides in the world, where this is the G20, which theoretically includes both the Russians and the Chinese. Chinese Xi did not come, and his stand-in, who was the prime minister, Premier, Li Qing, did not have very many bilateral meetings with people and kept a very low profile, from what I understand. At the same time, a couple of things came out of it. One was this plan to build a rail and maritime link between India via the Middle East to Europe. It's sort of a response to China's Belt and Road push.
Mm-hmm.
And that's got an okay from all the countries there, and it's going ahead. The countries are sort of a little bit divided when it came to Ukraine, because the Indians don't want to upset the Russians, and so they came out with this bland statement that basically looked at the suffering of the Ukrainian people without saying anything really beyond that. But and of course, the United States, Biden then went to Vietnam, and America's relations with Vietnam have been particularly strong, and Vietnam and China have a have had a rocky relationship, let's put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the Vietnam, it's an interesting sort of thing. You know, you talking about winning and losing wars, etc., and sometimes you look at the two different situations. In Iraq, for instance, it was a tactical victory, but ultimately we lost the war. In Vietnam, it was a tactical defeat, but in the end, we've ended up winning the war because Vietnam is now a capitalist country with close ties with the United States.
Mm.
So it's a strange sort of world in that way.
Interesting. So. Could you comment at all on our relationship with India and Hodi?
Yeah, we have a strong relationship. It's gotten stronger, especially as the Indians are concerned about the Chinese. And we're looking upon the Indians as a counterbalance to the Chinese. There's more and more, you know, the Indians, of course, Indian Americans are making humongous contributions. I mean, the head of both Google and Microsoft are Indian Americans.
Mm-hmm.
And Apple has begun production of iPhones in India. Again, so sort of a response in terms of China. So the relationship is quite good. It's moving forward, I think, without a question. Modi is a complicated guy, and it's a Hindu nationalist, which makes things a little more complicated, obviously.
Yeah.
So, you know, we have this problem all over the world, right? In other words, how much do we impose our values on these leaders all over the world in terms of democracy or human rights and everything else? And it's a balancing act.
So he seems to be to want to maintain defiant independence, and it's interesting because India is the fastest growing major country in the world. I mean, unlike China, which has a limited population growth possibilities, I mean, India is exploding.
Right, absolutely. So that's really the situation more than anything else. India is growing. China is not. India can keep on growing. But it's still, India has a long way to bring millions, tens of millions of people out of poverty, which China already has done.
Mm.
So there really is no extreme poverty in China at this point. There still is extreme poverty in India.
That is an interesting statement. I was not aware of that. I envision, when you think about China, some people may choose to stay on with the oxen and farm little areas of land in China. I thought that many people are refusing to move to the cities.
There are people staying on the absolutely, but they're not in extreme poverty.
Yeah,
they have their land, they grow their food. They left people to feed because a lot of people have left to go into the cities, so they're doing okay. I mean, are they rich? No, but they're not living in extreme poverty.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, they're not like the underclass in India. There is real extreme poverty in India, no question about it. There is not extreme poverty anymore in China.
Is the caste system still in force in India?
It's not enforced. I mean, certainly it's illegal, actually, but it still plays a clear role in society, without a question.
Interesting. Mark Shulman, again, the founder and publisher of HistoryCentral.com. Great for kids of all ages. I hope you check it out, HistoryCentral.com. Mark, always appreciate your commentary here on the show. Thank you so much for joining us.
Have a great week, Bob.
You as well. Thank you. All right, coming up, we're going to be visiting with Larry Reed, the President Emeritus of the Foundation for Economic Education. That and more right here on The Bob Harden Show on the Bob Harden Broadcasting Network.
Stay tuned for more of The Bob Harden Show here on the Bob Harden Broadcasting Network. Two-thirds